Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. This show promotes sustainable food systems that foster community resilience and empower individuals to make positive choices for themselves, their communities and the environment. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. On this morning's show, I am pleased to be joined by Emma Watts, the new CEO of Cultivating Community. Cultivating Community started as a grassroots movement in 1998 in Collingwood. And we've had Rob, what was Rob's surname again?
Rees.
Rob Rees on the show a year or two ago. He was the previous CEO and he talked a fair bit about what Cultivating Community is all about. But we'll go back over that a little bit. So it was a grassroots movement in 1998, starting in Collingwood. But it now supports nearly 700 gardeners, 24 community and communal gardens across Melbourne. And is a large not-for-profit social enterprise, which, of course, requires skilled management, and that's where Emma comes in. So welcome, Emma.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in on a rainy Sunday morning.
Good for the garden, though.
That's true. all right, so community, Cultivating Connections, Cultivating Community, sorry. It was all about helping people grow fresh, healthy food. And it was in the social housing, wasn't it, in Collingwood. Can you tell us a little bit about what you know about the beginnings of it?
Yeah, so basically it started, people were sort of doing what they call guerrilla gardening, so really just putting in, you know, their own little plots here and there. So we were brought in to, I guess, to formalise that, to, you know, help them actually sort of do it officially and properly and help have governance for those gardens, you know, because they are sort of, I guess, small communities or small microcosms that you need to have some rules and regulations around to make sure it works for everybody. So we started off doing that, you know, for one of the social housing or one of the public housing buildings at that point in time. And as you say, yeah, we now support 24 of those across Melbourne. We do have about sort of 700 gardeners. We also have a rooftop farm on a shopping centre in Burwood. So we have another sort of, you know, 1,000 people or so that come out, come onto the rooftop throughout the year to learn different gardening skills and you know, food gardening skills. And we also then provide that food that is produce there to, you know, a local food rescue organisation who then sort of passes that on. So, yeah, so it's certainly grown over the last sort of 27 years. Personally, I think there's room for more growth. I would love us to be doing this in, you know, in every state in Australia. I think there's absolute appetite for that. So yes, it has grown significantly, but I would say watch this space.
And are the gardens, the existing, the 24 gardens you now have, are they all still connected with social housing other than the Burwood one?
Yes, they are. So we run a couple of different models. So we run a community garden model, which means people get allocated their own plot. So they're the ones people will have seen that they've actually got a fence around them and they are, you know, they are locked so that people who have their own plots have a key and get access to those. And then in some areas we've got communal gardens. So that means that everybody comes in and contributes to the growth of the garden, but also can, you know, harvest some of the food as well. And that communal garden model actually works better in social housing. So social housing is where you have a mix of, say, private rental, you might have some disability housing, some affordable housing, but it's a, you know, it's not, I guess, people sort of being in those towers and, you know, everybody kind of being in the same, there's a stigma attached to those. So, you know, it's actually, it's a model that the government is moving to.
Oh, the new model,
is this social housing where people actually, you know, live and integrate as a community.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that model works really well for social housing because you've got a lot of people who might be going to work during the day and therefore, you know, don't have time to be looking after their own plot, but they can come in on a weekend or when we're there visiting and they can, you know, help a little bit with the garden, but then also grab some herbs on the way home and, you know, chuck it in their dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so there's different models based upon the different types of housing and what the community wants. We'll always do that sort of consultation to determine what the community wants.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea, say, take the tower, say, at Hoddle Street, and they've got a thriving garden down below, which I always pick in when I go past there. How many people do you think are accessing that are residents?
Yeah, so
as far as you know.
They vary. So some of the, you know, some of the sites have sort of 20 plots, others will have about 100. So they're all sort of slightly different. So, so we're all over Melbourne. So, yeah, obviously the ones in Hoddle Street, but then we're in South Yarra, Param, we're in the north as well. So we've got sites in, you know, Ascot Vale, Flemington. But, yeah, they vary in size just depending upon the space that we've got access to there.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you think it needs to go? And I saw on your website that you're moving into large kitchens and training people for job opportunities that have trouble getting job opportunities.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a bit?
Absolutely. So that's, that is a more recent development for us. So one of the housing sites that we have in Paran actually has a commercial kitchen at the bottom that the housing developer has given us exclusive access to. And so it's really an extension of what we do. We realise that, you know, people living in that social housing have barriers to employment that other community members may not. So we know people living in social housing have about a 20% rate of unemployment and the general community has about 4%. So it's a significant difference. And we will often see people who want to work. We have a lot of, say, new migrants or refugees who want to work but might have a barrier to employment. So we've come up with these employment pathway programs and we've got two of them. One of them is culinary, so they will come and do a training course in this kitchen. We've got this incredible ex-chef. She was at some high-end restaurants in Melbourne and now she, you know, lends her skills to our participants. And they will get training, they will get sort of a paid work experience opportunity as well. And then we're looking for employment opportunities for them. So, but supported employment opportunities. So at the moment we're working with a lot of sort of aged care providers because we know that there's a gap in skilled workers in aged care. But it also means that our participants get that supported environment. So we have one beautiful lady who was a counsellor back in her native Sri Lanka. And she couldn't get work here. Now she works in aged care and she loves not only cooking for people, she gets to talk to them. She gets to just go and, you know, go and have a chat. And, you know, she said, it's kind of like using my counselling skills. I'm improving my English, but I'm also, you know, cooking. So she said it's kind of, you know, the best of all worlds. So we've got that culinary program. And then we've also got a horticulture one. So we run our own social enterprise where corporate groups can engage us to manage their gardening, and then we actually put people through our employment pathway program who actually then either work for us or we help them find employment with another similar organization.
Wow. Now, just you said there was a commercial kitchen that was in Paran, did you say?
Yes.
And you said the developer let you have a, why did the developer have a commercial kitchen as part of that development?
Yeah, so I mean, when these developers put up tenders for housing to the government, I guess they put in all sorts of different elements that create that sense of community.
Good.
So, you know, housing is important, but this particular site also has a toy library. You know, it has different components that create that sense of community. So we're fortunate that they've given us access to that kitchen space. We've run, you know, community lunches out of there. We run, you know, if community wants to learn, we did a passata making thing a couple of weekends ago. You know, people can come and learn different skills. These are, you know, free or very low cost to community members, but it also means we can run this employment pathway through that kitchen as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to know the government and the developers are sort of at least starting to think in the right direction. That's good.
Yeah, I think, you know, there is recognition that the homes, you know, homes that we're providing for people on a social scale need to be different to what was built in the 1960s. You know, they need to be much more fit for purpose and create that sense of community as opposed to just being accommodation. You know, it's housing and a roof over your head, you know, is absolutely critical, but the communities that we create and the environment surrounding those housing, that housing is how people thrive. You know, you kind of go beyond that survive to actually thriving.
What is your what's been your background that's given you an interest in this sort of work?
Yeah, so I my last role was actually in the food relief sector, so working for one of the large food rescue and food relief organisations. And I think there's absolutely a place for food relief. You know, I know, and I'm sure you've covered this in in another session, but, you know, as a country, we produce three times as much food as we need for our people. And yet we've got one in three Australians who've got a degree of food insecurity. So there's something missing there. Yeah. So there's absolutely need for food relief and for sort of filling that gap between, you know, excess produce and people who need it. But for me, cultivating community offers something really different. It's, I refer to it, I don't know if I made this up, but food relief 2.0. You know, it's actually about sort of shifting the model and not just distributing food, but people participating in food. So, you know, creating the conditions where people can access fresh, culturally appropriate food, but also evolving the system so that you're setting them up for success on an ongoing basis. It's not just about getting a box of food for today and solving that problem. It's about how do we systemically solve this problem so people have that ongoing access and the control over what they're eating and what they're getting access to.
So has this new-ish emphasis on, you know, teaching cooking and teaching horticulture, has that been just in response to watching how people are using the spaces and what's going on socially? And so that, so cultivating community as an organisation has just responded to that need?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess because we, with the horticulture, it sort of started with horticulture first, because we run those kind of commercial offerings, we can create the supportive employment environment that we want to put people into. So, you know, for example, we've got a couple of young guys, Cam and Wisnu, who are both deaf and hard of hearing, who've come through our employment pathway program and they now actually work for us. But we have been able to sort of, you know, I guess, nurture their progress. You know, we get in interpreters when we need them. We do all of that sort of stuff. So we created the employment opportunity that actually kind of fitted in with our horticulture service. So that sort of happened first. And then really the kitchen space gave us the ability to move from, you know, gardening and food production into, you know, food preparation. So, yeah, that's been an evolution as well, which is it's they've all got sort of beautiful synergies, I think.
Yeah. Okay, we'll have a little break and we'll be right back.
Sure.
We're talking about ecological thinning and subsidised logging, but we basically mean the same things, don't we, here?
Wherever there are chemical corporations around the world, they're constantly trying to chip away at regulations.
Earth Matters, bringing you environmental and social justice stories from developments in government and industry to the campaigns and communities that are standing up to them. Earth Matters plays at 11 a.m. Sunday and 6:30 a.m. Wednesday. Turn your dial to 855 a.m. or listen online at 3cr.org.au.
While the headlines have subsided, the nuclear power plant is still not under control, with the spent fuel rods removed from only one out of four reactors.
Law needs to change so that our rights can be recognised, so that decisions in relation to the use and exploitation of our lands is out.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to three times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Connections show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show, and you can go to our 3CR Local Food Connections website and look at all of our podcasts of previous shows. Today I'm chatting with Emma Watts, CEO of Cultivating Community, about where Cultivating Community started and the directions that it's now heading. We'll talk a little bit about why Cultivating Community. So it's got that great name, hasn't it, that Cultivating Community. So why should we cultivate community, and why does it need to be cultivated at all?
Yeah, look, and you're right, it's in the name. It is about cultivation of food, but it's also that sense of community that is, you know, is just as important. I think, you know, particularly in the society that we're in today, that sort of, you know, human and social connection is getting harder. It's getting more, you know, more difficult to find. And I think, you know, a lot of people are struggling with that sort of personal connection with others. And I think historically, you know, we support people mostly in social housing, and I think historically those houses haven't necessarily provided that best sense of community, just the way that they've kind of been built, you know, many, many years ago. So having that green space and having a reason for people to come together and have a conversation is really critical. I think if you, you know, if you coordinated an event and just said to people, just, you know, come and chat, and they didn't have any other connection, it would be really difficult and awkward. But put them in a garden where they've got something in common, they've got something to talk about, they've got something to share, you know, they've got questions to ask of each other and, you know, support to give each other. I think it creates a sense of community around that sort of shared interest, which is really critical. Then people end up, you know, sharing food and bringing, you know, I made this and then I brought it down to lunch. And, you know, we do an end of year event every year, and people bring the most amazing plates of food and things that they've created in the garden. And, you know, there are things there that you've never heard of, never tried before. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's that sort of cross-cultural connection as well. And, yeah, you know, people bringing a sense of what's important to them and what they're bringing from their home country is really important.
Which must be doing important work in learning to appreciate other cultures and not be suspicious of them. Mm-hmm. or concerned about you know, this rubbish that Pauline Hanson goes on with, reaches a lot of people and seems simple to understand, and yet this sort of connection gives people real experience of each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. Look, I mean, you know, my team and I all sort of say we live in a little bit of a bubble, because, you know, we are operating in an environment where people are genuinely curious about other people's cultures and wanting to know more. And, you know, we have interpreters come in for any sort of critical sessions that we run, so that people really get an understanding in their own language of, you know, of what we're saying, and we get an understanding of what they're saying. But it is, we just feel so privileged to be working with people from so many different cultures, and, you know, they're growing foods that you and I have never seen in a supermarket or even a greengrocer in Australia before. And, you know, we feel incredibly privileged, and it sort of feels like this microcosm in that broader environment.
Mm-hmm. So do you see do you understand cultivating community as something bigger than just about nutrition or about even about employment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, nutrition, you know, as we mentioned earlier, there's food relief. People can get food. It's available, you know, through food rescue organisations. this is definitely something that is different and more holistic than that. So, you know, yes, people get access to fresh fruit and vegetables that, you know, they may not have access to otherwise. That's critical. But they're there and they're creating something themselves. You know, so there's personally, there's a sense of achievement. You know, you've actually grown something from scratch. And I have a team full of gardeners who are incredible. My skills are still developing. So, you know, to grow something from scratch, I know how rewarding that is. But you have that sense of personal sort of skill and achievement, and you're learning new things. But you are also then, you know, interacting with the people around you. So it's and that's really critical for, you know, spending time in nature is really critical for our mental well-being, but spending time with others as well and having those common interests and not feeling isolated is also critical. So yeah, you know, food is absolutely the thing that holds it all together. And you know, we know food is love. People from different cultures cook food to introduce you to their culture. It's such a, you know, such a universally known thing. But yeah, having that sense of sort of coming together and that sense of community, I think, is sort of what elevates it to the next level.
Mm-hmm. And it seems also that in just thinking about newcomers to the country, it's a way of allowing them to bring something to the people exist already here.
Yeah.
So, and to show that they've got something to bring.
Yeah, absolutely. And
to give them the self-esteem be able to offer something and have it accepted.
Yes. So yeah, absolutely. Everybody can, you know, can bring something that represents them, and everybody has something to contribute. You know, and we had, I remember one resident saying, you know, it was the first time in years they'd been able to cook something that really reminded them of home, and mm-hmm. they wanted to share that with everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, it was such a, you know, such a beautiful sensation for them that they really felt the need to share it. So, yeah, they're the sort of, you know, sort of things that we hear on a daily basis, and mm-hmm. it's really lovely.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about the Burwood. Tell me what that looks like. I've been there, but if you could explain what it looks like, who works there, and what the purpose of it is.
Yeah, so look, we've been privileged to get access to a rooftop space on top of the Burwood Brickworks shopping centre out there. And it's a massive space. It is the entire rooftop, and we've set it up as a garden, so anybody who visits the shopping centre can go up there. But we grow we probably grow about a ton of food up there every year, and we do that in a few ways. So we run some of our employment pathway training up there, so people can come and, you know, learn how to propagate. We also, you know, we'll run individual workshops up there. We'll run a range of sort of different training, some sort of formal training, and others just kind of, you know, work and weekend workshops and that sort of thing. We run training up there, and then when we harvest that food, we actually then provide it to, you know, a local neighbourhood house, who then uses the food to provide it to food relief for people in need in the local community. So it's got quite a few purposes, and I think, you know, there's to have that space on top of a community asset like a shopping centre is, you know, is fantastic. I think, we're very, very privileged to be operating in that community. And that Burwood community is also a really multicultural community mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, we see lots of, you know, things being grown and introduced that, that we haven't seen before. So mm-hmm. the community comes along and, you know, we'll come and sort of pick a few things. And, okay. Yeah, it's really lovely.
I like it up there too, because you get this view down into that you're in the middle of this garden, but you're looking at a lot of housing around you.
Yeah.
That medium density housing, and it feels like a community. You feel like you're in the middle of a human settlement where you could meet other humans there, you know, at the marketplace, at the shop,
yep.
and then also where the food's growing. And it's educative, isn't it? It gives yep. people a little bit of inspiration to what they could do with a square meter at their place.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And look, you know, there's a coffee shop up there, so people can, you know,
yeah.
it's not just a shopping, you know, you can come and do your shopping, sure, but, you know, you can go up to that space, you can, you know, grab a coffee. We have, you know, mums bringing their kids up to, you know, spend time in the garden and, yeah. you know, I mean, that's great.
Just sit
for
up
kids
there.
To start learning at that age, you know, about, you know, the tactile nature of plants and soil. So, it's a brilliant asset in an area like that you just wouldn't expect.
That's right. Do you know anything about who the developer of that shopping centre must have been switched on a bit, or were they just kind of greenwashing, or what do you think was going on there?
Yeah, the developer it is a property company, and that it's the actually the first six star you know, environmentally sustainable shopping centre in the Southern Hemisphere, I believe. So that's certainly part of their ethos. They've actually just sold the properties to another organisation, so hopefully they continue you know, that ethos. But I think, you know, they recognise that shopping centres, you know, they're important in terms of, you know, getting what you need, but also they can contribute to that sense of community. They are where people gather. So while there's a commercial kind of, you know, impetus at its core, they are, they were really fixed on creating that sense of community and having an asset that people could come to and enjoy.
All right, so funding's a big thing. So I imagine funding a couple of plots of a little garden at the bottom of the Collingwood housing estate there is one thing, but now it must be much bigger, and so that must, and it's a not-for-profit, right? So tell me about that.
Yes, it's always it all comes down to funding, doesn't it? So look, we are really fortunate that so Homes Victoria is the government department that is managing all of the social housing across the state. So they actually fund us to run the gardens, the community gardens that we do. There's obviously also, you know, I guess there's that's significant. It's a significant portion of what we do, and where there are gaps, and particularly with our employment pathways program, so that they're not funded, that's where we need to go out and seek funding. So the culinary employment pathway program, for example, we're finishing up one cohort at the moment. We need to seek funding for the next cohort because we've got a waiting list. So that's, you know, I guess that's the nature of sort of being that not-for-profit. We don't necessarily have another cohort that we can put in until we get that funding. So yeah, look, it's I think it's a challenge for any kind of not-for-profit in today's environment. The really critical part for us is building up that social enterprise and getting those kind of commercial ongoing jobs, so that when we do make a profit from that, we channel it back into our community programs. So, you know, people buy, I guess, procuring a social enterprise as opposed to sort of a for-profit organisation, they know they're giving something back that's bigger than just the service that they're getting.
So that's quite significant that Homes Victoria now, what did you say? It funds nearly all of cultivating communities operations.
It funds all of those sort of garden elements. Yes.
Wow.
Yep. Absolutely.
And when did that happen? Like, what did it take? You might not know.
But. Yeah. Look, it's my understanding is, and obviously I haven't been around for the 27 years, but my understanding is that sort of when it became formalised, that was sort of part of the funding arrangement, because we are using Homes Victoria property, so where we our gardens are on their sites. So where that's the case, you know, they will fund us to run those programs. But obviously with the shift and, you know, the towers coming down, we're working with them all the time to make sure that new developments also have some sort of green space. Even if, you know, they're doing a few sort of new developments that might only be temporary while they sort of get people, you know, it's a big project. So it's going to take sort of up to 10 years to get the project finalised. But, you know, we're working with them and having conversations all the time to say, you know, this is a really critical part of our community infrastructure. We need to make sure that we've got this green space, you know, no matter what happens in the evolution. And they're very open to that. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a great relationship with them.
That's fantastic. So after 27 years, you really are in a great position to be, you know, good advocates. You've got knowledge.
Yes, we know our communities. You know, we have regular, you know, meetings and conversations with them. We do surveys. We know what's important to them, and we know the value that this brings. And I think being able to demonstrate that is really critical.
Great. Thanks for coming in today, Emma. That's all we've got time for.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR, and today we've been chatting with Emma Watts, CEO of Cultivating Community, about the growth of that organisation and the connections it's making within the community, within different parts of the community and different sectors, and also with the Victorian government. So it's a quite positive story. Until next week, love the land you're on, share your surplus and take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, you can become a 3CR subscriber. You just go to our website and it will show you how to do that. If you want to stay updated on all the latest events in Melbourne to do with food growing, food cooking, community gardens, food justice organisations, and just basically how to grow things, go to the Local Food Connect website, an excellent website. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more Radical Radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.